Hello and welcome everyone to Spirit of Truth Church for this talk on Stockholm Christianity, listening to the wrong voices. Now I want to do a quick check. Okay, yeah, it looks like everything's on, but I do want to do a quick check. For those who are here, am I coming in loud and clear? Do we seeing video and are we seeing hello? And are we seeing are we hearing audio? We're hearing audio or we're seeing video, because it was looking a little funky here at the beginning on my end, and perfect, all good. Yeah, I like to check that because sometimes when it's not and I do 30 minutes and no one can hear, oof, boy, that's not fun. All right, so let's go ahead and start again, listening to the wrong voices. So far in Stockholm Christianity, we've been talking about all of the different ways in which Christians essentially capitulate or compromise on their values and beliefs, okay? We're now switching in West's second part of his book to the causes of Stockholm Christianity. What is leading people down that road? Now, the one we're going to deal with today, and there's, I think, three of these we're going to deal with, but the one we're dealing with today is listening to the wrong voices. And I want to start out by actually giving some some examples from my own life, people in my own life who have walked down this path. No names, obviously, but we're going to talk about what they did. So one of these examples was a friend of mine in college, and this person was taking she was a Christian, and she was taking a course from a professor at the school that I attended for undergrad. And this professor essentially did not believe in the Bible, was not a Christian, you know, said the Bible is full of errors, held essentially the standard liberal view of scripture, and argued that the Gospel of Thomas was, you know, essentially predated most of the, if not all of the Gospels. Okay. So in other words, this is ultra secular liberal scholar type person. And my friend was taking the class from this professor, and her comment was, well, even if I don't agree with all of it, even if we're from different things, the professor is a expert in their field, and I still want to learn from this person. I still want to take in all that she has to offer. You know, I can sort of keep the meat and spit out the bones kind of argument, or, you know, I'll be able to tell the difference between these, between good and bad, and all of this kind of stuff. Okay. And that was the thought. Now, from my perspective, I said, every word that comes out of this professor's mouth is either going to fall in one of three categories. It's either going to be data, which, sure, data is data. Or it's going to be a lie. Or it's going to be based on a false worldview. But this professor, because of this professor's belief system, cannot actually impart knowledge of any kind on that topic of Christianity and Scripture. Because the professor does not hold to a Christian worldview that essentially is required to even produce knowledge in that field. And why is this important? Because I don't know what happened to this person. But my comment is, this person began to listen, to take as knowledge, to take in as true, things that a secular non-Christian was saying, because of this non-Christian's position of authority and credentials. And so there's just no way that this person's thinking wasn't affected by that. It had to be. But this is how it's justified. Okay? Another situation. There was a church member at a former church that I was part of who had bought a book and was reading a book because she wanted to know more about New Testament reliability and the Bible and, you know, manuscripts and stuff. And so she was reading this book, which she found very interesting. And I said, oh, what's the book? She's like over halfway through. She's like, yeah, it's really good. Turns out it was Bart Ehrman's Misquoting Jesus. And I literally said, that book, though it has data, none of the conclusions are good. These conclusions are erroneous. They're based on false worldviews. But this person was being influenced by Bart Ehrman because she had just simply no clue who he was or what she was even reading. So some people fall into this stuff because they deceive themselves into thinking that the world has appealing knowledge. Some people fall into this because they think, oh, they don't know any better. A third group For example, I've known many people who have chosen to do the Enneagram in yoga. And they say, well, I'm going to do these things because they help me. And so because these practices help them, they start listening to the theology of the Christian Enneagram people and Christian yoga people. And it's very much secular theology, very much not Christianity. But they start to take that theology and start to believe it. And so sometimes it's experience that leads people astray. And so all of these situations are can be the case. But then there's even one more situation, and I'm going to use myself as an example. So being an apologist can be a very difficult position. And the reason it can be a difficult position is because as part of your job description, you not only have to understand and read your position on something, but you also have to read and understand all of the positions you disagree with. Now, why is this hard? Well, as a young apologist, I found out it's actually quite difficult to sit there and read arguments against what you believe on an emotional, mental level. It's just oppressive to read these things. And because you're learning, because I was learning, I didn't always have the answers to refute the arguments either. So there'd be times where I'm saying, shoot, that sounds like a solid argument. It wasn't, but I just didn't know any better. I hadn't been trained yet. I was just trying to do this myself. And thank goodness and praise God, I had other people around me that I could call on and say, hey, what's going on with this argument? Or, hey, what's going on with this? Because I was very impressionable because I was just researching this stuff. And thank goodness I had other people could say, oh yeah, well, here's where they're flawed, or here's where this is flawed, or here's the issue here. And it's like, oh, okay, good. That makes a lot of sense. But I went into it thinking I could handle it, when in reality I couldn't. And so there's that problem too. And what I came to realize over time was this. I had to know the truth, forwards, backwards, inside and out. I had to not only know the data of the truth and the conclusions of the truth, but I had to know the methodology of the truth. In other words, how do I know something's true or not, at least whether it's good, is often based on what methodology was used to derive it. If I put something through a junk machine, it's going to only spit out junk. So I realized, oh, I've got to know all of that. Here's the problem. Welcome to 10 years of grad school. I mean, for real. That's about what it is. Welcome to 10 years of grad school to essentially do that on most theological topics. So it's a long, hard road. And this is why I typically recommend learning the truth, for most people to learn the truth, forwards, frontwards, backwards, etc. Listen to the right voices. And then, along with somebody who is trained, begin to assess and critique the wrong voices. And so that's how I typically recommend people go about this, because I've seen so many friends throughout my, 20 years in ministry really fall off for various reasons, getting sucked into all sorts of things because they just kept listening. And this is essentially West's point. West's point is this, throughout this whole chapter. You are always affected by what you listen to. Always. This is one of his main points. And he says, unfortunately, many Christians have been tricked into, or unwittingly, or even knowingly, listen to wrong voices the majority of their time, and are thus heavily influenced by them. Now, we still have to know what the opposing side says. I'm not saying we don't. But the key thing is, we have to know our side so well that the differences pop immediately. And not just the differences, but the reasonings for those differences, the reason for those differences. And so Wes is going to get into this, and he basically spends most of the chapter going through a bunch of different reasons why these sources are the wrong voices. We're going to talk about a bunch of that. But I also want to point out another piece to this. Okay, I want to point out another piece to this. This idea of listening to the wrong voices. Okay. Why is preaching so important? Why is what your pastor says every week probably the most important thing of your week. Because most likely, your pastor is the person who is going to be directly influencing your discipleship the most. And if you're having to filter that every week, or even every other week, or even at least once a month, one, you're going to be affected by it, no matter what. And two, you're not hearing the truth as often, as regularly, and as deep as you should. And so this is why the quality of your pastor's sermons is the single most important thing about a church. I'm not saying other things aren't important, but I'm saying the single most important thing is the quality of the preaching. Because that is the starting place of discipleship in a church, is the pastor's preaching. So, going to churches because of the stuff they have, when the sermons are atrocious, is like saying, I can be discipled effectively by a person who really shouldn't be discipling anyone. And I can take the discipleship I get in all these programs and events as okay, even though the center of that discipleship is this awful preaching. So, again, I make a call here in the middle of this to say, if the preaching of the church is not good, you need to find a church that has better preaching. Because that is the core of this, listening to wrong voices. Now, some other issues with this. Let's start talking about, that was my little intro there. Let's start talking about some of what West says. So he's going to argue that essentially non-Christian sources are saying things like it's impossible to live according to Christian sexual standards, that science proves the human species is the product of an undirected evolutionary process. And he says, quote, if we spend our time listening to unreliable sources whose motives, assumptions, and claims undermine biblical teachings, we are preparing ourselves and our loved ones to become Stockholm Syndrome Christians no matter what we may start out thinking. End quote. Another quote. People are overly attracted to or influenced by information sources they think give insight into reality, but in fact lead them away from the truth. End quote. And here is the core. Here is the core. This is where living in this world gets very difficult. Because we might want to say, oh man, I'd love to study human behavior and relationships. I'll go get a degree in psychology. Here's the problem. I don't have a degree in psychology. What I have is, I think, either 9 or 10 courses in psychology. I took everything but the research methods course, even though I actually did research while I was in there in psychology. Basically, I almost had a major in it. I've taken a slew of psych courses, and I can say this. Psychology does indeed often depict things. It even seems like it corresponds to reality. And in certain cases, it does. But in general, the field of psychology is based on secular principles of the understanding of the soul, the body, the mind, and consciousness. And so at its foundation, it's going to get some things very, very, very wrong. And this fundamentally is the issue. Is that we're here in this world. And it's virtually impossible to operate in this world and not be influenced by secular thinking. Every time someone is told, well, you have to attend a DEI meeting as part of your job here, or you're fired. Okay? That's indoctrination. That's listening to the wrong voice. Even if you disagree, even if you don't, still listening to the wrong voice, it can still have an influence on you. And especially more so when you're attracted to it. Then West gets into this idea about the news media. And I'll just read you some of the stats he gives. He says 55% of journalists believe they shouldn't cover all sides equally.
Wow.
60% admit that, quote, news organizations mostly tend to favor one side. More than 40% admit that, quote, journalists are often unable to separate their views from what they report on. Then there's this one. 65% of national journalists are working to reform society, and 79% of local argue they're working to reform society. The problem is most journalists in America don't hold the views and worldviews of the majority of Americans. From the 60s through the first decade of the 20th century, quote, data shows that journalists are overwhelmingly more secular than most Americans. They're liberal on social and economic issues. They favor the Liberal Party. And yet that was our news sources. So now we have alternative news sources popping up. And what happens? The major news companies deride them as false information. Okay? But how does this progressive bias get thrown in? Well, first, they set the agenda. Here's a good question. He kind of brings this up. He says, have you ever heard of a soft story on Christianity in the news? When is Christianity covered? When there's a scandal? Oh, well, we're going to cover when, for example, an LGBTQ person gets attacked, or when an abortion center gets attacked or something. But we're not going to cover when churches and crisis pregnancy centers get attacked. Okay? The Bible is essentially the most important book and most bought book in the United States in the course of its history. How many news articles you see on that? Is there a what's going on in your local church page in your newspaper or on your news channel? Okay. Agenda setting. In other words, the stuff about church is negative. The stuff about Christianity is negative. The stuff about social help is positive. The stuff about various issues, liberal issues, is positive. What about issue framing? One of the most egregious examples of issue framing, and I remember when this happened, it was fairly recent. I'll go ahead and read it from the book. But this was one of the most egregious examples of issue framing, and it's atrocious. The people who did this should be ashamed of themselves. Let me go to the page, and I'm going to get the get this thing here real quick. Yeah. Quote, in March 2023, a woman who identified as a man massacred 6 people, including 3 children, at a Christian school in Nashville, Tennessee. If you followed news coverage of this horrific mass murder, you will know that the story was not framed by major media outlets as an example of transgender violence or extremism, even though the mass shooting took place the very week that transgender activists had called for, quote, a trans day of vengeance, end quote, in the nation's capital. Nor were most news stories framing the attack as an example of a hate crime or as the targeting of Christians, even though there had been a dramatic spike in attacks on churches over the previous year. Instead, the news stories largely focused on using the attack as a way of discussing how the transgender community is a victim of intolerance. End quote. Well, then I'll say this. Quote, framing coverage in that way is not a neutral decision. It is a value-laden decision flowing from the ideology of most reporters. It is a decision by journalists that shapes how the public views the world. End quote. That's disgusting. But I remember reading it and seeing it being like, this is insane. Like, what is going on here? So issue framing. Here's another great example of this. In 2010, 2/3 of the stories on Easter were negative by the big 3 networks in America. 91% of them on Easter focused on sex scandals in the Catholic Church. On Earth Day, 100% of the news about Earth Day was positive. What about movies? Passion of the Christ. I remember this one. I remember too. Passion of the Christ versus Da Vinci Code. Passion of the Christ, they tried to paint it as anti-Semitic and deride it. Da Vinci Code, they tried to say, oh, well, that's an intriguing theory. Look, Da Vinci Code is literally undermining Christianity. The Passion of the Christ is literally showing arguably one of the best put-to-film presentations of the Passion of Jesus Christ. It's completely ridiculous. Georgia Southern University. 2019, they did a study about hypothetical news stories, and they said, okay, if a hate crime was done against a mosque versus a church, would your reporting differ? And the answer was, quote, they're more willing to see the event as discrimination or hate crime if it was at a church. In other words, if it was if it was, well, than if it was at a church. So if it was at a mosque, they were more willing to see it as a discrimination or hate crime. LGBTQ. If an LGBTQ person was called immoral and hateful versus if a conservative Christian was called immoral and hateful, they were, quote, three times as likely to depict the professor attacking gay people as a bigot rather than the professor attacking conservative Christianity. And then what about labels? Gender-affirming care. No. Mutilation. Like, what's going on here, guys? Abortion labels. You know, it's like, oh, you're anti-abortion. What about pro-life? No, they tend to favor anti-abortion rather than pro-life, right? It's framing. It's labeling. All of these things are ways in which the media influences. What about lopsided sources? And this is huge. They basically cite liberal or progressive or secular side of the ideological spectrum. You know, if it's a conservative scholar, they say conservative scholar. But if it's a liberal scholar, they just say scholar say. And the point of this, when you hear that, oh, scholars say and all this kind of stuff, and it's like totally anti-Christian. Well, that's to demoralize you. That's to manipulate you. It's to make you feel like you're alone. I felt that. There's many times where I've said, oh my gosh, is there anybody else in this world who has a conservative viewpoint? I've definitely felt that before. I mean, it's wild. Oh, be on the right side of history, if you've ever heard that one before. Okay? Then there's also straight up false reporting or lies. And he goes into a whole bunch of those as well, but that also does happen. It's kind of wild stuff. Then what about social media? Well, we've seen what's happened in social media. Zuckerberg got out there and said, oh, I've been pressured by the government to upload or to essentially downthrottle and upthrottle certain stories, to make sure to keep certain things swept under the rug. You're talking about a government and social media conspiracy that was uncovered. The pressure was put. They did what they were told to do. And now it's main news. But again, where's the uproar about that? Oh, no. It's just conservatives that hide information and that misrepresent. Are you kidding me? These are the types of issues. What about search engines? Google can blacklist sites, other sites are pushed. Google searches are highly manipulated to screen out sources and emphasize others. Abortion's a great example of this if you start searching. Wikipedia, his founder says it's just left-leaning at this point. And then, what about the big danger? What about artificial intelligence? Here's the scary thing. What about artificial intelligence? In general, I understand there are some uses of artificial intelligence, I get it. But I will say this. We have to be very, very careful what we do with artificial intelligence. Very careful. I'll go ahead and just read some quotes here. Quote, the underlying programming of these systems can lead to the generation and dissemination of completely fictional statements. I had expected Bard to generate the kinds Bard is Microsoft's. Google's Bard, sorry, Google. Microsoft's Copilot, Bard's Google. I expected Bard to generate the kinds of inaccuracies and bias found in places like Wikipedia, and it probably drew on Wikipedia sources. What I didn't expect was that Bard would invent completely false information, such as claiming wrongly that the United States Supreme Court had ruled that the teaching intelligent design in public schools is unconstitutional in the case of Kitzmiller versus Dover. In reality, Kitzmiller was merely a federal district court case, not a Supreme Court case, and its decision only applies to one part of Pennsylvania, not nationwide. When I asked it to justify specific claims or cite sources, Bard repeatedly invented court rulings that didn't actually exist. It generates the names of the purported legal cases and even cited the courts that purportedly issue the rulings, but these court cases and rulings never happened. Quote again, let that sink in. Bard provided fictional sources in support of false claims. The only way it can do that is if it's told to do that. It can't do that unless it is given the parameters that it is allowed to do that. So this is bad. This is bad. Okay, here's another one. This is kind of a funny one. It says, quote, I later learned I'd experienced a well-documented flaw of AI systems. They generate all sorts of imaginary facts. In one humorous example, ChatGPT kept asserting confidently and incorrectly that Russians had sent various numbers of bears into space. ChatGPT even invented names for imaginary bears. Aleshoya, Pushinka, and Vladimir. When asked for references, ChatGPT produced fake URLs. Quote, if you realize the implications of what I'm saying here, you should be frightened. Christians who aren't aware that AI-based information services can be even more biased and inaccurate than other sources are asking for trouble. End quote. What about entertainment? I mean, I don't know if we have to get into entertainment as much. Let's just say this. It is massively progressive, massively liberal. They are absolutely pushing Satanism, LGBTQ agenda, anti-Christianity, anti-Christian morality, literally anti-Bible stuff. I mean, you name it. And he even mentions one thing that was produced by Disney, a Disney-owned company, that I was shocked. I hadn't even heard of this. I had heard of one of the other ones, but I had not heard of this one. And I'm not even going to really talk about it, but we'll just say this. It involves an animated show about a woman who's impregnated by Satan and gives birth to the Antichrist. And this is all viewed positively. Okay? And, quote, the actress who voiced the character said of her role, quote, I love that we are normalizing paganism. Laura is a pagan. She's a witch. She's jacked. End quote. And, man, it's pretty crazy. This kind of stuff is becoming more and more prevalent. And then we have the de-emphasization of religion. Things like Hallmark films and stuff like that, where Christmas and Easter are now more about the secular holiday part of it rather than the incarnation of Jesus and Jesus' resurrection. Okay? Biblical teachings are trashed all the time. Think about how much Christian morality you might see on a network show or a sitcom or something. It's almost non-existent. It's almost non-existent. And the bottom line is, and this is hard, the more time we spend filling ourselves with spiritually toxic content, the toxicity eventually kills us. It's just true. And it's not that one thing here, one thing there, it's not what I'm talking about, but it's very easy to get sucked into just a litany of these things. It could be on any level. Then there's the issue with scientists and college and university professors. And again, I mean, I don't even know how much I have to really say about that, how bad that situation is. But basically, there's this idea that scientists are, you know, the impartial, factual, objective people. Nothing could possibly be further from the truth. I mean, really, it's pretty interesting. In 2021, a national survey of over 5,000 academic biologists, 89% identified as liberal, 85% as pro-choice, and 63% as non-religious. I mean, that's huge. And yet these people are shaping our worldview. College university professors, it's almost even worse. In 1999, they surveyed over 1,600 professors at 183 American universities. They found 72% identified as leftist or liberal, 67% believed homosexual lifestyle is acceptable, 84% endorsed the right to abortion, 75% thought extramarital cohabitation was acceptable. According to a 2014 study, the United States as a whole had a, quote, 6-to-1 ratio of liberal to conservative professors. In New England, the figure is 28-to-1. Okay. Here we go. According to the survey in 2007, only 1% of faculty at such PhD granting elite universities would be described as born-again Christians. So we now have a second thing to talk about here, which is the university. And there's it's really bad. There's a lot of problems that we got to really address here. You're talking about at your elite universities, less than 1% Christians. Most universities have barely any. Okay. And we now have to say, what are the reasons why people are going to a university in the first place? Well, I know for a lot of people, it's credentialing. For a lot of people, it's, I want to go to the most famous university so that I can get into the best jobs at the best things and make the most money. So really what it comes down to is money. I want the most money. Okay. Second reason people choose universities, because they're well known for a topic. So, oh, this school's really good at medicine. This school's really good at such and such. This is good at biology or STEM or whatever. And so, like, well, I'll go there. Okay. Another reason people choose universities, oh, I like this place. It's the most fun. It's hip. Okay, whatever. Here's the problem. If you think a university is the equivalent of a job training facility, if you think that a university is the equivalent of a fun place to grow up, if you think a university is a place of free thought and thinking where you will get to explore truth, then you are woefully incorrect. What a university traditionally does and still does is form citizens. That's what it does. You would go to a university, you would be learning various things about various subjects, but the whole point is they're forming you into a, especially liberal arts universities, would be forming you into a what they consider a good citizen of the country. When these are so dominated by secular people, their goal, you may go there saying, oh, I'll just go to engineering and learn this, but you're not just taking engineering courses. You're going to be taking all sorts of courses, and even your engineering courses are still going to have this stuff in it. It's going to be undergirded with secular beliefs and secular thinking. And here's the truth. If you don't accept that thinking and beliefs, you will never fit into the field. And so by the time people are already in this, they realize that it's too late. So then they accept the things because they say, well, I have to believe this in order to actually do my work in my field. And then they do it. And then that changes what they think about Christianity. And I can't tell you the number of times I've seen that happen. So what do we do? Well, there are Christian universities out there, for one, that even though the student population may still be very secular, at least the professors should be Christians. However, even that is getting thrown down. That's why I'm starting Hartwell Divinity School. It's why we've got Hartwell University. It's why we're doing these types of things, because we're trying to create a solid, conservative Christian school that's affordable and that you never have to worry about compromise. You can know when you go there what you're going to get. And so this is the issue. And what I consistently see is parents who are afraid because they're trying to let their kids make the decision. And then I see the kids saying, I don't want to go to Christian school. I want to go to this other school, this secular place. And in my head, I say, how in the world did you come to that decision? And I'm wondering if I have to maybe be a little bit more like a, not completely, like a Gordon Ramsay kind of situation and be like, you know, kind of confront them with it and be like, why in the world would you do that? You know, like, actually, because again, the problem is sometimes I'm too soft and then the person doesn't actually face the truth of what they're, doesn't actually face it. And the thing is like, okay, well, we need to get people to start facing what they're actually choosing and admitting what they're actually choosing. And that's the reality. Because the reality of what they're choosing is they're choosing a situation that is going to produce a Stockholm Syndrome Christian in them. It may not. And this is the second thing I was going to say that I remembered from a little bit earlier. A lot of people say, oh, well, I'm going to go here and I'm going to reform this school, or I'm going to go here and I'm going to reform this, or I'm going to change this, or I'm going to, you know, be a Christian in this place, or I'm going to do that. And I'll say, I hope you're the 1%. I really do. I hope you're the 1% that actually has an impact and not one of the 99% that basically comes out of the secular atheist. An LGBTQ secular atheist who's off the rocker, who hates their family. I hope. I really do. Because that is the reality. The university, you are not going to a university as a student and shape it. It is going to shape you. 99%. And even if you do shape it, like at my undergrad, you don't have the power to remain. They can start kicking you off and they can start stripping everything away. And at my university, I think I just found out this last week that for 10, I think it was probably about 10 years, there was no Christian campus ministry. There was no Christian presence at all. Shocking, but this is the reality. These people hate and they wanted to get rid of it, and they did. So with all of this kind of stuff, it begs the natural question, what do we do? So I want to talk a little bit about that. So here's the deal. If we listen to the wrong voices, quote, we make it a lot more likely that we or our loved ones will become Stockholm Syndrome Christians. Quote, we're more likely to adopt the assumptions and views of those who reject Christianity if we spend most of our time listening to those who reject Christianity. So the first thing that Wes suggests, and I agree with him, choose your information and entertainment sources wisely. Here's why. Your number one source of information that is the single most important source of information in your entire life, throughout your life, is your pastor. Why? This is the person who is in charge of directly discipling you every single week through sermons. If that voice is not rock solid and engaging you in forward progress discipleship, that is the first change you have to make. Period. To downplay that, to ignore that. I would almost argue, in fact, dare I say it, dare I call it sinful? Let me think about it for a second. Dare I call it sinful to knowingly be discipled by someone you believe is teaching you either false teachings, a compromised hermeneutic, a compromised interpretation, a compromised gospel, to knowingly continue to fund, support, and feed that? Yeah, that seems simple to me. I think there's a number of different reasons. Now, one might say, well, every church is imperfect. No, I get it. But there's every church is imperfect, and then there's my pastor spouts stuff I disagree with every single week because it's liberal or it's watered down or it's whatever every single week. Different things. We're talking about different things here. And I think when it gets to that level, to continue to support that is a transgression against yourself and God, I would guess. But yeah, that seems sinful to me. And there is the issue. You have to change that. That's number one. What's number two? Number two is your sources on, I'll say it like this, anything academic. The thing most people don't realize that you only get when you get into later degrees is how much secular satanic theory goes into virtually every academic field from a secular perspective. The English, as a field, is shot through with anti-Christian sentiment and anti-Christian worldview. Psychology, sociology, shot through with anti-Christian worldview. Biology, shot through with anti-Christian worldview. Like, this stuff is unreal. Literature, specifically, shot through with anti-Christian worldview. So there's so much of this stuff. We've got to start looking at all of our sources, our entertainment sources, our academic and intellectual sources, and we've got to start saying, is this something that is teaching me truth, or is this something that is teaching me lies? And don't fall into the trap of saying it's okay to listen to a bunch of voices for the little bit of truth I get, even though I have to spit out most of it. If you're having to work that hard to find little bits of truth, I can tell you right now, there are better people to listen to on that topic. Second, don't just let your information and entertainment shape you. The only way to do this is actually to, one, find the right sources, listen to them, learn the methodology, and then when you listen to other things, apply that methodology and ask, where is this failing on each one? Here's the thing, you're probably not going to enjoy listening to them. This is my issue. When I read sources I disagree with, and I'll say it like this, I'm not upset and I don't get frustrated because I disagree. That's not the issue. I get frustrated because I hate reading things with bad methodology. It's just annoying to watch people make these mistakes of how they're generating information. Like, you're flawed, you're wrong, and you're wrong because you have the wrong inputs. And that's what's frustrating. I could see somebody who does a really good methodology disagrees and say, oh, that's interesting. Like, we disagree, but you know, I see where you're coming from. With a lot of these secular sources, though, I'm like, your assumptions are so fundamentally screwed up that I don't even know what to say. It's just annoying because it's like, how do you even discuss something when someone's methodology is so backwards? And that's the issue. And so what is the one Bible verse that really appeals to this question? It's Romans 12:2, and you're probably very familiar with Romans 12:2. I'll go ahead and read it now. Do not be conformed to this age, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, so that you may discern what is the good, pleasing, and perfect will of God. You can't do that if you don't have a pastor that's actually teaching the truth. You can't do that if you don't understand how to read the Bible properly with a good hermeneutic. You can't do that if you're constantly being bombarded by false things. So that's the injunction here. Choose your information wisely. Don't let it shape you. Learn and be discipled by people you should learn and be discipled by, not by the world. Whew, boy, what an intense one. Next time, we're talking about pleasing the wrong people. Almost as bad. All right, well, I'm going to go ahead and kick off a Zoom call here real quick. I've been able only about 15 minutes today. It is an anniversary today, so I'm going to spend some time with my wife today, which is going to be fun. So I'll do a 15-minute Zoom here real quick. Let me just go ahead and copy the meeting link, post that in here. All right, here it is. Again, just stick around in the in the opening thing, I've got to shut everything down first before I open it. That was the church meeting. It's like, okay, perfect. All right. So thank you so much for joining us here tonight at the Spirit of Truth Church for this talk on Stockholm Christianity. Listening to the wrong voices, man. What a wild ride. I hope you all had a good time. I look forward to seeing some of you in the Zoom call. Have a great night. Thank you so much. And I hope to see you again next week. Have a great night, everybody.